Sai Ram. It is time again for our regular musing series on the Gita, and Professor Venkat Raman is here with us to give his 8th talk on the essence of the Gita. We remind you once more that this musing series on the Gita, presented by Radio Sai, comes to you in response to the many requests made by our listeners over the years. We also remind you that this series on the Gita is being broadcast in alternation with our other series on spiritual awareness. The two series are complementary to each other, and that is why we have intertwined them. We hope you enjoy both and find them to be beneficial. Over now to Professor Venkat Raman.
Loving Sai Ram and greetings from Prashanthi Nilayam. The Gita has 18 chapters, and thus far we have made it through 9 of them, which means we have crossed the halfway mark. Today I wish to offer a brief overview of chapters 10 and 11, both of which are beautiful and grand in their own respective ways. To understand why Krishna taught Arjuna these chapters, we must pay close attention to the opening slokas of chapter 10. Krishna says, "Yet once more, O Mahabahu, hear my supreme word, which I, desiring their welfare, shall speak to you." This is sloka 10.1. "Neither the devas nor the rishis know me as the true source of all, though I am in every respect the origin of both." This is sloka 10.2. Now I am calling particular attention to these slokas because they are most relevant to us today. Before we try to understand the message in these two slokas, let us have before our mind's eye the scene. There they are, Krishna and Arjuna, right in the middle of a field soon to be drenched with blood drawn in a fierce war, with Krishna telling Arjuna all about Mama Dharma. In bodily form, Krishna, the Purna avatar, is close to 80, while Arjuna, who is the brother-in-law of Krishna, is slightly younger. The two have moved together closely for decades, and Arjuna, who loves Krishna dearly, regards the latter as a wonderful friend and guide, roles which no doubt Krishna always played. But now at this moment of eternal truth, if I might call it that, Krishna wants Arjuna to know who exactly he is, so that his teachings might be taken seriously. In effect, Krishna is telling all mankind, "O humans, these teachings are not that of one man to another, but verily the mysteries of creation revealed to man by God in human form. God comes down as man mainly to teach man the lessons that he ought to know, lessons that might have been taught many, many times before, but lessons that he easily forgets while chasing the pleasures of the transient world. Out of compassion for you, O man, I am here again, telling you everything you must know, things that alone would redeem you. Pay careful attention, and do not let my human form delude you." Perhaps now you know why I am calling attention to the first two slokas of chapter 10, which otherwise might be simply dismissed as openers. They are a reminder to all of us to pay very careful attention to the words, the teachings, and the message of our beloved Swami, whom we all unquestionably love, but otherwise do not take seriously, except at the most trivial levels perhaps. With this caveat, let me now proceed further. discrimination, wisdom, freedom from delusion, patience, truth, self-restraint, inward calm, fear as well as fearlessness, non-violence, equanimity, contentment, austerity, charity, fame. Verily, all these various attributes proceed from me. These form slokas 10.4 and 10.5. I am the source of all, and from me everything evolves and flows. This knowing, the wise constantly worship me with hearts full of devotion. This is sloka 10.8. These slokas convey an important truth, which is that the source of everything that we see in this world is God and God alone. This obviously would raise one huge doubt in the minds of almost all. People would say, how on earth can that be? There is so much bad and evil in this world, and surely you are not suggesting that all this evil came from God, are you? This is a perfectly valid doubt and needs clarification, which fortunately is easy since Swami himself has given the hint. Before I tell you what Swami says, let me mention one thing known to all. Take a glass of fresh grape juice and leave it, say, on the kitchen table for maybe 2 or 3 days. At the end of that time, the juice would have fermented, and as you know, it is from fermented grape juice that wine is made. Indeed, fermentation is the starting point for making many alcoholic drinks. Now, alcohol is not good for us, but where did that alcohol come from? What was the starting point? It was fresh grape juice. The message that this analogy has for us is that bad is invariably good that has gone astray. When they are all born, all children are pure, having just come from God. But these children also bring with them into the world the vasanas acquired in previous births. If you recall, in earlier talks, I referred to these vasanas as mental genes. Thanks to these mental genes and the effects of the world, what is a cute baby to start with can later become a murderer, and indeed, even a diabolical person like Hitler. This leads to another question that we have often been asked. Indeed, this is an ancient question. People say, okay, God did not create evil, and that evil is what men create thanks to their bad tendencies. But then why on earth did God allow that? Surely you cannot deny that there is a lot of evil, can you? This is a valid question and needs a careful response. Fortunately, once again my job is made easy by Swami. He says, in effect, listen, Bangaru, life is like a play, a drama scripted and enacted by God. The world is the stage, and all beings are the actors, and that includes you too. You know about dramas, do you not? In any interesting play, there are both good guys and bad guys. In the play, there is a sharp difference in the roles that these people enact. But when the curtain comes down, are there any enemies? Do not all the actors sit together, have coffee and talk about how it all went and so on? So it is in life. All are actors, but the problem is that most people do not know about it. Very few do, and those who do understand that life is just a shadow play. Some people act as if they were good while others act as if they are bad. At the core, all are good. But in the drama itself, there is no doubt a sharp contrast. And in accordance with this contrast, there are all kinds of ups and downs in the course of the play. Not all understand the shadow aspect of life. And when they suffer from this ignorance, they see the world in terms of black and white. However, the wise do not suffer from this delusion, and they see only good people everywhere. That is to say, they see only God behind all. Of course, as a part of the cosmic drama, they too enact their roles as required, but they have no hang-ups about the good guys and the bad guys. That is a paraphrase of Swami. Listen now to what Krishna says about such evolved persons for whom there are no good guys and bad guys. Krishna says, with me always in their thoughts, their lives surrendered to me, always speaking of me and enlightening each other about my greatness, they remain ever contented, taking delight in me. This is Sloka 10.9. To such ones, ever devout and steadily worshipping me with love, I confer the power of discrimination, which then leads them to me. This is 10.10. Out of compassion for them, I, dwelling in their hearts, dispel the darkness of delusion with the bright torch of wisdom. This is Sloka 10.11. Now, this last remark of Krishna is a very important one. The Lord says that even if a person starts off ignorant, if he has faith in God, then God would, step by step, help this person to get rid of his ignorance. And do you know what makes the Lord do that? His compassion, which is born out of the faith of the devotee. So faith, which is often ridiculed as being blind and illogical by the so-called intelligentsia, actually counts for a lot with God. Remember that. Let's move on. Krishna says, of the Vedas, I am the Samaveda. Among the Devas, I am Indra. Of the senses, I am the mind. I am the consciousness of all beings. This is Sloka 10.22. I am also the all-devouring death, as well as the source of all things to be. In feminine virtues, I am glory, beauty, speech, memory, intelligence, constancy, and forgiveness. This is 10.34. Whatsoever is the seed of all beings, O Arjuna, that I am. There is no being, moving or fixed, that can exist without me. This is Sloka 10.39. There is no end to my divine powers, and what I have described is but a trifling sample. This is 10.40. Whatever is glorious, beautiful and mighty, know that all such as issued from a minuscule part of my infinite and limitless splendor. This is Sloka 10.41. These slokas are important, and we do need to spend a minute or two reflecting on them. There are many such, but the common theme of all this is simply this. O man, know this for sure. I am the source from which every single thing in the universe, from the atom to the galaxy, from the ant to the elephant, has come. By the way, it is to stress this that Swami sometimes tells us, in the universe, there is only God. And nothing but God. And now comes yet another important sloka in which Krishna says, but why needst thou to learn all this in great detail, O Arjuna? It suffices for thee to know that I support the entire universe with but the tiniest fraction of my unlimited yogic power. This is Sloka 10.42. Now, this is an important sloka. Do you know why? Because it says, O man, do not waste your time by trying to discover and identify the greatness underlying all the wonders of the cosmos. Even if you manage to do that, it would represent only an infinitesimal part of my glory. So, do not waste time in evaluating my greatness and trying to fathom my glory. Instead, spend your time by showing your love for me. As Swami puts it sometimes, to know that the sea water is salty, does one have to drink all the water in the oceans? Is it not enough to taste just one spoonful of sea water? Well, we now move on to the famous chapter 11, wherein there is a glorious description of the Lord giving Arjuna a glimpse of his cosmic form, or Vishwarupa, as it is popularly known. We must first try to understand why the Lord did so. If you recall, it all started with Arjuna trying to quit just at the very last minute, giving all kinds of silly excuses. Of course, while trying to throw in the towel, Arjuna also tells Krishna, "I surrender to you." Those words moved Krishna, who immediately began to explain to Arjuna why he must fight. Arjuna was stunned, because he had never heard Krishna talk like that before. It was the profoundest lesson that he had ever been taught, and he had never before even imagined that Krishna was one of such great wisdom. "I have taken you through all that territory, but now came a moment when Arjuna begins to wonder who really Krishna is. Was he his brother-in-law? Was he his friend? Was he his companion or advisor? Or was he something else?" So he asked Krishna to tell him, that is Arjuna, as to who exactly Krishna was. And that is when Krishna reveals that he is the cosmic almighty, etc. I am sure you know all about that remarkable scene. And while drinking in the awesome spectacle he now saw, Arjuna says, "I see thee everywhere, infinite in form, with countless arms, stomachs, mouths and eyes. Neither the end, nor middle, nor beginning do I see, O Lord of the universe, O universal form." This is Sloka 11.16. "I behold thee, a brilliant mass of indestructible effulgence, adorned with club, mace, discus and scepter. Scarce can I see thee, for so dazzling is the sight, bright with the splendor of the fiery sun, blazing forth from all sides. Mind-boggling it truly is." This is Sloka 11.17. "Thou art the imperishable, the supreme being that is to be realized. Thou art the ultimate refuge of this universe. Thou art also the eternal guardian of eternal dharma. And thou art, I believe, the everlasting being." This is Sloka 11.18. "Thou hast no beginning, middle, nor end. Infinite is thy might, and innumerable are thy arms, O one, having the sun and the moon as thine eyes. Thy mouth is a blazing fire that scorches the entire universe with its radiance." This is Sloka 11.19. "By thee alone are filled the spaces between heaven and earth and all quarters. And O Almighty Lord, the three worlds tremble at the sight of their wondrous but awe-inspiring form." This is Sloka 11.20. The above slokas are not only wonderfully poetic, but also full of indescribable significance. Arjuna is simply wonderstruck. In the twinkling of an eye, the familiar form of Krishna, human in appearance and with a build similar to his, was now filling everything between the heaven and the earth. Arjuna could not simply believe that it was the same Krishna. The question now arose, of these two forms, which was the real Krishna? Arjuna asked, "Tell me, O Lord, who art thou so dread of form? I bow to thee, O God Supreme. Have mercy and tell me all about thyself, O Primeval One, for I comprehend not thy purpose nor what thou dost." This is Sloka 11.31. Just ponder over that last question for a moment. This is the question that Arjuna asks of Krishna, whom he is supposed to have known so very well and for so long too. And in reply, the Lord says, "I am time, inflamed now and engaged in destroying the world. Even without thy slaying them, not one of the warriors ranged for battle against would survive." 11.32. "Therefore, do thou arise, fight and win glory, defeat thy foes, and conquer an unrivaled kingdom. By me these warriors have already been slain. Thou art no more than an instrument of mine, O Savyasthin." This is Sloka 11.33. On the face of it, these two slokas would appear to be the reply to the question that Arjuna put. But there is more in them than meets the eye, as they say. Just fast forward to our own times. For 80-plus years, Swami has been with humanity, hailed again and again as the Purnavatar of the Kali Age, as God in human form, etc., etc. And yet how many devotees are constantly conscious of the fact that He is verily the Lord Almighty in the sense described in the 10th and 11th chapters of the Gita? I am tempted here to narrate an incident told to me many years ago by an old-time devotee. The devotee I am referring to heard it from his father, who many years ago used to be with Swami almost all the time. One day in that period, Swami was in Vrindavan. At that time, the now familiar Trayi had not been built. And to Swami's building in the old bungalow was led a learned scholar, a Vaishnavite, who wished to narrate extensively from the scriptures in the Divine Presence. Bhagavan graciously granted permission, and soon the scholar was seated before Swami and started his chant. Of course, the elderly gentleman, the father of the devotee whom I just referred to, was also present. In the course of the chants, the scholar made frequent references to Swami, hailing Him as Lord God Himself and so on. About an hour or so later, seeing the scholar quite tired, Swami quietly signaled to one of His aides and whispered something. The assistant disappeared inside and was soon back, bearing a silver tumbler in his hand. Taking the tumbler, Swami held it out to the scholar and said, "You're very tired and your throat is parched. Take a small break and take a sip of this warm milk. It would be good for you." The scholar was obviously touched and in a very reverential voice replied, "Swami, I am deeply moved by your thoughtfulness and kindness. But you see, Swami, today is Ekadasi. This is the name given to the 11th day after the full moon and the new moon. In accordance with the rules laid down in the scriptures, Swami, I fast on Ekadasi day and break my fast in the traditional manner only on Dwadashi day, that is the day following Ekadasi." Swami smiled and replied, "I understand." He then placed the tumbler on a small stool by his side and allowed the scholar to continue. Meanwhile, another quiet signal, and soon Swami's assistant returned with a silver tray covered with a cloth. Swami then told the scholar, "Bangaru, that's enough. You have done a wonderful job, and I do not wish to tire you anymore. I have arranged for a car to take you back to your house. Now, before you leave, I would like to bless you with these." So saying, Swami took the cloth cover off the tray and handed over to the scholar some clothes and an envelope with some cash, evidently the traditional way of doing honors. The scholar was overjoyed, took Padanamaskar, and then left. After the scholar left, Swami smiled and looked at the elderly gentleman by his side. And Swami said, "Look at this man. He speaks non-stop, quoting the scriptures and hailing me as Lord all the time. And at the end of it, when I offer him a glass of warm milk, he says he has to observe an austerity. Now, why do people observe austerities? To eventually have the darshan of the Lord. If, as he said, I am the Lord, why then did he hesitate to accept the milk I offered him? Where was the need to continue with the austerity when he was already at the end point? Looks like deep in his heart, it was not really the Lord he was praying to." That is what Swami said to the gentleman by his side. Now that says a lot, does it not? Let me now go back to Sloka 11.32, wherein Krishna explains that the awesome and fearsome form seen by Arjuna represents destiny in the role of the destroyer. This is an important point that needs some attention. The cycle of life relentlessly moves forward and reaches a point where the consequences of evil actions, both individual and collective, become manifest. In the Bible, there is a reference to Sodom and Gomorrah. I am sure you know all about that. Krishna confirms that if people resort to evil acts, there would be hell to pay. That is the law of life. God further confirms that destiny would extract its price in its own way, choosing actors who would take care of the details. If as a part of this drama a person has been chosen to act on the side of dharma, then that person has to play his or her part. To run away from it would amount to shrinking one's dharmic duty. In this manner, Krishna drives home to Arjuna the lesson that his duty was to fight for the cause of dharma because that was the task assigned to him by destiny. Earlier, Krishna told the same thing to Arjuna but in his normal human form. Now, however, he is reiterating the same message wearing his awesome cosmic form. That's the difference. Obviously, all this was too much for Arjuna, who now says, "Salutations to the O Lord from every conceivable side and every imaginable angle. Thy prowess is infinite and thy might is immeasurable. Thou pervadest all and therefore thou art all." This is Sloka 11.40. "Whatever I have importunately said to thee in the past in presumption based on familiarity and intimacy, taking thee for a mere mortal, addressing thee on equal terms as O Krishna, O Yadava, etc., etc. Believe me, it was all in ignorance." This is Sloka 11.41. "In whatsoever way I might have been insulting to thee, O Achyuta, in jest, while reposing, at meals, in privacy, or in company, please forgive my trespasses, O immeasurable one." This is Sloka 11.42. These slokas are very pertinent to us because all of us are often deluded by the human form of Swami and tend to take liberties we ought not to and dare not. And listen now to what Krishna tells Arjuna about his cosmic aspect. "Not by the study of the Vedas or other scriptures, not even by sacrifice, nor charities, nor even the performance of severe penance and other austerities, can I ever be seen as thou hast been privileged to do." This is Sloka 11.48. "Very difficult it is to behold my cosmic form, which thou hast seen, and which the gods are always clamoring to see." This is Sloka 11.52. "But, O Parantapa, by staunch and unswerving devotion, I may in this form be known and realized and merged into." This is Sloka 11.53. "Arjuna, he whose every act is dedicated to me, who looks upon me as the supreme, who is devoted to me, who has no attachment and who is free from malice to all beings, such a one comes to me." This is Sloka 11.54. This last sloka is very important for us. In simple language, it tells us, "O man, have full faith in the avatar and do his biddings. If you do so, you are through." Back again to the cosmic form that Krishna revealed to Arjuna. Two things about it. Firstly, Arjuna had to be specially blessed to see the cosmic form as an integrated phenomenon. Secondly, this form is really the sum total of all that we see in the world and indeed in the universe, both what we call good and what we call evil. Swami sums it up by saying that everything in the universe is some aspect or the other of God. Normally, we tend to see these things in bits and pieces as distinct entities and often not related to each other. However, adds Swami, if we acquire jnana or the ultimate spiritual wisdom, then we would automatically be able to see the unity underlying diversity. This is how Swami puts it, quote, "Man is all the time seeing the universe around him and yet declares he has not seen God. What is the form of the cosmos? Is it not divine? You are seeing the divine in the form of the physical universe. In the Bhagavad Gita, this cosmic form of the Lord is described as Vishva Virata Swarupa. What is Vishva? It is the whole cosmos. The Vishva Virata Swarupa is the collective form of everything in the cosmos. End of quote. Vedanta repeatedly declares in various ways, of course, that behind the seen is the unseen, which is the real basis of all that we see. Concerning this, Swami observes, quote, "What one sees in the wide world is not really what appears to the eye and the senses. If one relies purely on one's senses for the interpretation, then one would be totally misled, and one would be merely seeing untruth in truth. One must close one's eyes and reflect on what one sees, that is, use one's buddhi. Then one would begin to see the world as a play of the Lord. That insight is what constitutes sifting truth from untruth, getting at the basis from the mere outer appearance. One must etch that lesson on one's heart. The heart would then guide properly. One would then always see the Lord everywhere and not Mr. X or Y or Z." Unquote. The message is loud and clear. The secret key to seeing the cosmic form of God is not to wait for God to specially bless us with that power, but to become pure. If purity becomes the base, then one would not only be able to see God in the wonders of nature, which is not too difficult, but also in the faces of the poor, the destitute, the suffering, and those dying absolutely helpless and without anyone to care for them. It is our selfishness that tends to blind us and prevent us from seeing God in others, especially when so seeing would demand our help. Indeed, once we begin to see God in others, we would even stop calling anyone else evil, for there is really no true evil. It's all God's play, in which some don the role of good guys, while others play the bad guys. Who are we to judge some as really good and others as truly bad, when it's all a mask and a put-on? It is pertinent to note in passing that Arjuna was simply petrified on seeing the cosmic form as revealed to him on the battlefield. Thereupon, he prayed to Krishna to revert to his normal human form, which he was far more comfortable with. Perhaps that is why Swami has chosen never to reveal that cosmic form to us. In fact, I distinctly remember that back in the old days, when he used to have sessions regularly with students in the afternoons, on many occasions, when students pestered him for a glimpse of the cosmic form, Swami would merely smile and waving his hands toward the sky, the birds, the trees, etc., he would say, "What is that to show specially? All these form a part of the cosmic form." Everything in the universe is a manifestation of God, some of it with non-living forms and others with animate form. In all cases without exception, the Lord is hiding behind in a disguise. Once we are able to see God behind all those myriad masks, we would truly have the cosmic vision of God. The acid test of having had that vision, and we can have it only if we try hard to be pure, the acid test is the irrepressible urge to love all and to serve all. So please remember, love all, serve all is not a mere slogan, but a clue to how each and every one of us can have the cosmic vision of Swami. Think about it. Thanks for listening, and may God be with you always. Loka samasta sukhino bhavantu. Jai Sai Ram.
You have been listening to a talk by Professor Venkatraman in the Musing series on the essence of the Gita. We hope you enjoyed this program. Please do write to us with your comments. You may reach us at listener@radiosai.org. This program came to you from the studios of Radio Sai, which broadcasts 24 hours a day the loving message of Bhagavan Sri Satya Sai Baba.